The following audio content is a talk from Convergence, a service for young adults at University Presbyterian Church in Seattle, Washington. For more information, please visit our website at upc.org/young-adults.
Well, welcome. Good to be with you. I'm Dave. Some of you know me, some of you don't. Let's see if I can see. Yeah, I just can't. It's going to be another couple of these where I'm going to be able to have to use my glasses. You're going to go through it one of these times. It's been like the last 4 years. All of a sudden, I'm like, were you guys here the time where I think it was like maybe 2 times ago where I brought my little Bible? I used to bring this little thing. I used to like store it, and all the guys when I was a college pastor, we all had them. Like, just was the more beat up, the better. You know, mark it up. Just it's kind of a prideful thing. Bring it out. You're like, oh, I'm sorry, the page fell out. Because I've been reading it so much. Sorry, I gather that there. And I brought this Bible with me because it was in my truck when I came in. And it came in, and I went up to read it. And I'm like, can you read that for me? It's humiliating. So we've been talking about the elements of worship, and I love that we're doing this because I know that growing up, I went to church growing up, and there were a lot of the elements of worship that just didn't make any sense to me. I just did them because people told me that I was supposed to. And tonight we're going to talk about one of the ones that I think strikes fear in the most people's hearts, and that's confession and assurance. And I was thinking about this and going through it, and I thought, oh man, in some ways, what I love about the work I do as a counselor now is in some ways I get to hear people's confessions. It's one of the most moving things for me. It's really just a very powerful experience. It always feels like hallowed ground to me, this place where I know that there's some things that people just aren't going to say anywhere. And that feeling of my way of looking at it is life hits us. Life comes at us and pow, 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 pow. Just like lightning striking, lightning striking, lightning striking. When I was a college pastor, I used to take groups of college students, and I would take them and climb 14ers with them in Colorado. And so you'd go through all the training, and the lightning training is part of the process where you're teaching. If you see a lightning 200 yards off, you're thinking, sweet, it's not that close to me. You're in danger, especially if it's raining. The ground can conduct that lightning, and you can get popped not being anywhere near that lightning. So you have to learn how to get your feet insulated and get on a rock or something, get down low. And it's like that for me. It's like sometimes life hits us, and it travels. It just goes boom, but we don't do anything with it, and then it stops. And so we can have that feeling of having something happen to us, or we've done something, and now I just got to carry it around. I just got to move through my life as if it hasn't happened. And so we know what it's like to kind of put on the face and kind of put on the clothes and try and do like kind of like they were saying up here, kind of have the show for people that everybody can see us in a certain way, but inside there's something that's gone on that we don't know what to do with. And that is where confession comes in. When I was a little kid, I learned to fear confession. And that was when my mom would make her famous chocolate chip cookies. Anybody have a mom that makes best chocolate chip cookies? You don't. No, you don't, because my mom makes the best chocolate chip cookies. I'm telling you right now. She would make these things. And it was like, as a 7-year-old kid, for me, that was just almost too hard. Like, Christmas time would come, and I was one of those kids, and my dad would do this thing. He'd just be like, gosh, I wonder what you're getting for Christmas this year. And I'd almost faint. And I was like, I don't know. And I just all dropped down to my knees. It was just too much for me, too much excitement, too much goodness. I can't handle the goodness. It's just too much. I can't wait. And there would be these cookies out there, and we'd get one, but that's not enough. There's nothing worse than no chocolate chip cookies. That's one chocolate chip cookie. That's just not enough chocolate chip cookies. And I remember this morning I came down, and my mom had made these fresh chocolate chip cookies the night before. She put them in that beautiful glass jar. They're right there. And I wasn't supposed to have a chocolate chip cookie because it's morning. It's breakfast time. That's not when you eat chocolate chip cookies. I knew that. I'm 7. 7-year-olds know a lot. And I went, and I remember just walking by the chocolate chip cookies, and there's like this magnetic pull from the chocolate chip cookies. It's like I can feel them calling, eat me. I'm like, what'd you say? Eat me. I'm a chocolate chip cookie. You know, and I'm like, did you just talk to me? Like, no, but eat me. Some people are going, that guy's weird. It's true. And I remember, I think, well, I can't eat a whole chocolate chip cookie, but maybe I could just have a bite of a chocolate chip cookie. Because they were chunky cookies. And so I remember going in there, and I took a bite of a chocolate chip cookie. And then I put it back. Sweet. Looks just the same. And I go about my stuff, and I'm going doing my business stuff, and doing my stuff, getting ready for school, and get my lunchbox, and, you know, trying to figure out how to put pants on, 7. And I come downstairs, and my dad is just holding this cookie. And my dad is looking at me like, did you take a bite of a chocolate chip cookie? Now, I should have said, yes, I did, because I couldn't help it. It called to me, Dad. It spoke my name. It asked me to eat it. I should have told him the temptation that I was facing. I should have told him what I had gone through as a 7-year-old passing by the beautiful jar of chocolate chip cookies. And instead, I just went, no. One me. He goes, my dad's just holding this cookie right up there. He goes, so you're telling me that your mother came down and ate a bite of a chocolate chip cookie and put it back in the jar? And I'm like, I don't know, but it wasn't me. And he goes, so you're telling me your sister came down. Now, my sister, if you've never heard me talk about my sister, she was the good child. She was good. She would not, it was like asking if, you know, Mother Teresa had eaten a bite of a chocolate chip cookie. It just would not happen. I'm like, maybe. She might have, you know. So my dad's just going, okay. Well, he doesn't press it. My dad was good that way. But in my heart, I knew that I had done something wrong, and I knew that I was guilty. And I remember this feeling like I can't. Now I'm in a box. I can't. I just told you that I didn't. Now I'm trapped. I can't do anything about it. And I remember this at the time, Paco Bell's Canon. Have you guys ever heard? Have you ever heard that? Well, my parents were really into that music for some reason in that period of my life. So that night, I'm back home from school. I'm up in my room, and they're playing this song. And I swear the conviction of the Spirit came on me. And I started crying. I'm like, I came down. I did eat the cookie. I'm so sorry. And they're just like, it's okay, but just tell us. Confession is scary. You don't know what's going to happen. And it's like, now you're not a good person. It's just tough. It's a really, really difficult thing. Confession's been a part of our church. And I remember going to church, and they would give you this thing. They give you the bulletin, and where the confession comes up is it's in the Protestant church anyway, is it's written usually like in a small paragraph, and everybody reads it together. And I was always afraid to read this thing because I didn't know what the next sentence was going to say. It's like, I confess that I da 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 and I ran over your dog. And no, I didn't. You know, like, I didn't know. You know, I'm not going to read this thing until I've actually read it and say, well, yeah, I can sign off on that. That's pretty good. I can do that. So it didn't really mean a lot to me. It was like I was kind of reading this sort of formula, and then somebody would say, blah, 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 you're forgiven. I'd be like, sweet, thanks. And I didn't really get anything from that. It didn't mean anything to me. James takes confession, and he puts it in the context of the community. So I'm going to read to you out of James chapter 5. It says this, and I'm just going to read chapter 5 so you can get a big old chunk of scripture tonight. Come now, you rich. Weep and howl for your miseries which are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted, and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have rusted, and the rust will be a witness against you and will consume your flesh like fire. It is in the last days that you will have stored up your treasure. But he's talking to this community that is waiting and waiting and waiting for the return of Jesus. And they're looking around at all these people spending money and all these people living well. And they're saying, what's the deal? Why should I be living this lifestyle? Why should I be living this church thing when so far no Jesus? He says, behold, He says, the pay of the laborers who've mowed your field and have been withheld by you cries out against you. And the outcry of those who do the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of Sabbath. You've lived luxuriously on the earth and led a life of wanton pleasure. You have fattened your hearts in the days of slaughter. You have condemned and you have put to death the righteous man, and he does not resist you. Be patient, therefore, brethren. Now he's talking to the people. Be patient, therefore, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. Behold, the farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it. And it gets the early and late rains. You too, be patient. Strengthen your hearts. Be content. For the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not complain, brethren, against one another, that you yourselves may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. As an example, brethren, of suffering and patience, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we count those blessed who endured. You have heard of the endurance of Job and have seen the outcome of the Lord's blessings, of the Lord's dealings, that the Lord is full of compassion and is merciful. But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under judgment. Is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. Is anyone cheerful? Let him sing praises. Is anyone among you sick? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer offered in faith will restore the one who is sick, and the Lord will raise him up. And if he has committed sins, they will be forgiven him. There's a movement James is making right now. I'm going to put my glasses on. There's a movement that James is making right now that you got to pay attention to. That he's talking about the forgiveness of sins as important as the importance of the forgiveness of sins right up there with physical healing. He's putting these things right next to each other, saying, when you're walking around with this stuff that you've been walking around with, when you're walking around with these things that you have either done or have been done to you, it's this story, you're walking around with it. See, literally, this is on the same level of the stuff that can make you sick. He says, therefore, and this is the word, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another so that you may be healed. The effective prayer of a righteous man can accomplish much. Elijah was a man with a nature like ours, and he prayed earnestly that it might not rain, and it did not rain on earth for 3 years and 6 months. And he prayed again, and the sky poured rain, and the earth produced its fruit. My brethren, if any among you strays from the truth, and one turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his ways will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. Confession, right in the middle of the congregation. That means that in our group, we are designed to not only confess, to bring forward that stuff that we've done to somebody, some place that is contained. But also we as a community are the ones that are entrusted with this idea of speaking a word of assurance to each other. So I want to talk about confession and assurance tonight. When we walk out of here, my hope is that we can see it in a new light and a new way. And where you feel stuck in your life, where you feel like you're walking around with a lot of stuff that you don't know what to do with it, my hope is that this will give you some light. Assurance. or confession. Let me give you a definition first. Confession can be a formal public avowal or declaration of one's faith. You'll hear a public confession of faith. You'll hear it used like that. So people will talk about confessing their faith. But it can also be an acknowledgement or declaration of one's sin with the implication of a prerequisite repentant heart and intent to change one's future ways. So it's not just saying, this is what I did. It's the idea that in your heart, there's some sense of sorrow. There's some sense of grief, some sense of how you've trespassed. And there's a sense of, and I don't want to keep doing it. So it's not enough if you're like, if you're two kids and someone just, you know, reaches over and socks your arm, which guys do when they're in fifth grade. Bam. Sorry. Bam. Sorry again. That's not what we're talking about. That's not any change. There's no sense of anything going on inside. It's just sort of a rote word. The rote word sorry. Some of you grew up in families where it was sorry. Where eventually that word got worn out. It didn't mean anything. The idea of confession is that it comes from an inner working where it's being brought to somebody else, where there's a sense of, here's how I impacted you. And I have grief over that. And I have an intent to do something different. That's confession. Assurance is a statement, an assertion intended to inspire confidence or give encouragement. And that's the word that we give back. It's okay. I get it. It's done. I'll tell you more about that as we go along. So let's talk about confession. Do we got those slides up there? Can we get the one with the three and three? I'll just start, see what you do. All right, three things about confession. First of all, it can be scary. There is somewhere we learn, and again, this goes back to that cookie story, and I don't know about you, but there's this sense of sometimes when we're growing up, We somehow can buy into this idea that if I ever do something wrong, that means that I am something wrong. So we turn this idea of guilt into shame. It's a little heady. See, stay with me on this one. So I've done something that has caused harm to somebody else. And I can start to believe that if I admit it, that I then become someone who's not good. Does that make sense? And so when I come to you and I'm going to talk and I'm going to confess, this is what I did. I can be afraid that I am now, by speaking it out, I am now going to be named as a bad person. That's shame. Some of you know, you've got parents that they will do anything for you except admit they were wrong. Except say, I'm sorry. I made a mistake. Please forgive me. When we become attached to some particular element of life, maybe it's parenting, or maybe it's your profession, you become attached. Everything else, it's okay. I can say I'm sorry about all the other things, but not here. This one area is so important to me. It's my identity. It's where I put all my stake, all my value. And if I goof in that one particular area, I'm afraid that my whole being is a failure. And so if you were raised by parents where their identity was in parenting and they goof, it becomes very, very difficult for them to come and say, you know what? I made a mistake. It's scary. But confession, number two, it's a gift to us. You can see it in James. Saying is confession is the way that we keep clean. Confession is the way that we can walk light. You ever known those people? Those people that kind of have an ease about them. They're not brittle. Some of you have seen leaders where if they ever do something wrong and you want to talk to them about it, what do? They get really defensive. Someone said it. Well, no, well, or they'll say, yeah, I'm sorry, but, well, you're right, but. The gift of confession is God's saying to us, you don't have to be me. You don't have to be perfect. When you are someone that actively confesses, in a place that's appropriate, in a place that can contain it. In a sense, what you are acknowledging and living is that you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be God. You don't have to be all-knowing. You don't have to be all-gifted. You don't have to be all-wonderful. You don't have to be the star anymore. You don't have to be all things all the time. Confession is this gift that says you can be light, clean, free. You don't have to carry that with you. You're all right. I don't expect you to be me. It's this gift. Confession, the third thing is it's got to be a blessing to the one that hears it, or it should be. Who's an extrovert here? What's your name?
Mark.
Mark, would you come up here with me? Mark. Come on up here. Mark is my son. You didn't know that. It's good to see you again, son. I'm glad to be up here with you.
I'm thankful for my good looks.
Oh, someone call you cursed. if you have to look at if you're taking after here. Mark is, the other day, I was pulling my car up into our parking lot by our garage, and I accidentally floored it when I should have put the brakes on, and I rammed right into the back of your car. Just want to let you know.
Which makes me the crappiest father in the world. And I'm so sorry. And you're going to hate me now. And you're never going to forgive me. Will you forgive me, please?
You're never going to meet your grandkids.
Oh, I knew it.
It's perfect.
It's awesome.
Let's give Mark a hand. It's awesome. Okay, hold on. What's wrong here? Besides the fact that was really good, it was like we did it. It's like we practiced it beforehand. Have you ever had a confession like this where the person confessing just falls apart? Who's the where's the burden now? On him. So who is this confession about? Is it about me or is it about him? It's now about him. I'm putting all the weight of me on my worth. Can you feel it? I did this wrong thing, and now I'm awful. I'm terrible. I'm this person that you can't, how are you ever going to respect me again? How are you ever going to, love me as your dad again? And for Mark, if he cares about me, there's that pull for him to try. And he did a good job of holding your ground right there. That was good. But you know what it's like. A lot of times when someone comes and confesses to you with that kind of a falling apart, they're either defensive or they fall apart. There's that burden that now Mark's got a job in front of him. What's he got to do? You've got to validate me. Perfect. His job is now to validate me. And he's going to walk away. Is he going to feel like I've blessed him? No. I'm going to walk away feeling like you blessed me. And that's the challenge of honest confession, is that it needs to be for him. So the idea is to say, listen, man, I got to tell you something. I goofed. And I was thinking about something else, and I accidentally ran into your car. And I really want to let you know, I'm really sorry. You know what? I try and do better than that. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pay for your car, and I'm going to work out some other way of parking in there so that doesn't happen again. But I really do apologize. Get it?
We're good.
All right. Good. No, we're good. There we go. All right. A confession that is mature. What I would coach you on is this idea in James, is this idea of coming in a way that's blessing those who hear it. The idea is that you're doing it for yourself, but you're also keeping the other person in mind. Does that make sense? So assurance. Let's take on that one. Assurance is the flip side of confession. What we're talking about, we're in an insecure place. When we have to confess, we feel kind of off balance. Assurance is that work of God comes first from God that says, you're okay. It's the idea that God, that somehow, and this is sort of a mystery, and I talked to a lot of people about this and did a lot of study on this, and at the end of the day, the best that I can tell you is that assurance from God is there's just this sort of a tug in your heart. There's sort of a cementing of certainty that God's looking at you and saying, we're good. And first of all, that's on the cross. When we look at the cross, what we ought to be seeing first and foremost is God looking at us and saying, hey, I just want to tell you, when you look at the cross, what I'm telling you is we're good. That's your assurance. If you ever doubt it, if you ever think we're not, if you ever think that there's more you can do to earn my love, I want you to look at the cross and know that I'm looking at you saying, we're good. That's assurance. Now, there's two sides of this. One is sort of the before the profession of faith. This is where the Catholics took it and did their own thing with it. Before your profession of faith or your coming to faith, there's a confession and sort of a being brought into the family of God. But then after that, we still keep sinning. We still keep making mistakes. We still keep causing harm. And that's that continued need for God to say, hey, it's okay. We're good. Get up. Keep walking. I got you. I love you. I know everything about you. I know everything that you are. I know how you're gifted. I know how you're not. Keep walking with me. That assurance, it's this kind of a spiritual sense of knowing. Second thing, and then James is talking about this, is that God gives us this incredible, incredible position of being people that are entrusted to speak assurance to each other. We get the opportunity to look at each other and say, we're good. You're okay. You're forgiven. How many of you in the last 10 years have looked someone in the eyes and said, I want to tell you something. You're forgiven. It's done. Good. I want to challenge you that if you haven't done that, if you've not been able to find those words, they're powerful, powerful words, and people need to hear them. You may not think they do, but they do. Even the more strong they look, the more bravado they use, the more they look like they know what they're doing, trust me, on the inside, everybody needs assurance. And you can give it. That person at work goofed up, they owned it, they confessed. One of the gifts you could turn around and say, hey, thanks. We're good. You're okay. That is a spiritual exercise. Last thing is that it can be a challenge for us to receive assurance. And this is where I got to tell you, I'm in there with you. It can be tough to really believe we're okay. It can be tough to receive. No. I'm not good. I'm no good. No. It's never enough. Something happened a long time ago and you've been trying to work it off ever since. I'll tell you what, in the field that I'm in, we talk about systems theory. We talk about generations inheriting it. We can talk about people being born into something where three generations ago something bad happened and there's been this sense of carrying the guilt and carrying the guilt and carrying the guilt and carrying the guilt. And someone finally says to us, you know what? It's over. It's done. In the name of Jesus Christ, you are forgiven. And we could barely believe it. It's hard to receive sometimes. It can be an act of faith. My dad, I'll tell you two stories, give you a challenge, and then we'll close. My dad just lost his wife, my stepmom, just died of cancer about 2 months ago. And it's been a really, really hard time for us, just really tough. One of the blessings in the midst of that very tough time has been my dad and I talking more than we probably ever have. My dad is pretty German-Irish Protestant when it comes to sharing his feelings. How you doing? I'm good. Dad, you're a counselor. How are you doing? I'm really good. We work on it. But you know, there's something about it when you lose your spouse. I'm learning that it just breaks you. And suddenly we've been talking. And I'm conscious in my own growth on how to be a son to a father who's lost his wife, his partner. And I'll tell you something, man. He loved his wife. She's a dean of faculty down at a seminary in California. Sharp, sharp woman. And I was telling him, I've been conscious of not putting us into a role where I'm the one that has it all together and he's the broken one. So I've been trying to be conscious. This is just me kind of sharing where my own growth edge is. Trying to be conscious of me bringing in what's hard for me. So every winter, I can suffer from seasonal affective disorder. I catch that when the barometer drops, so can I. And then, so I was talking to my dad about this a little bit. I was just saying, you know, when I do that, I can get a little irritable, a little isolative, which can kind of hurt the people around me. They don't know where I go. So I was telling him, you know, I just feel bad because sometimes I know the people that are closest to me, they just wonder where I've gone. And my dad said, he goes, Dave, don't you forget it. You're a good man. This is coming out of his place. And I'll tell you what. I know there will be a day when I'm at his funeral. And I will never forget that. That assurance. That simple. You okay with an exercise? If you're comfortable, close your eyes. And I want you to imagine yourself at about, 7 or 8 years old. And imagine that you are in a theater. And in this theater is an audience of people. You can hear the buzzing of the crowd. And seated in front of the stage is a row of judges. And in this judge table, you can see people that you recognize. Maybe an old teacher that told you you can't write. Or that maybe ridiculed you at some point. Or that one person in middle school that said that thing to you that defined you for so many years. Or maybe it's a parent. Maybe it's a grandparent. It's all the people on this table that you feel with you all the time. Even if you're not thinking about them, you can feel them, this judgment table that's looking at you, and they are telling you that you're not enough. I want you to imagine yourself older, as you are now. And you can see that stage, the spotlight's on that little 8-year-old kid, and you can see how scared that kid is. Unless there's no way this kid can impress these judges and feels totally shamed, completely alone. And imagine the feeling of courage to walk up on that stage and go stand behind that 8-year-old kid and say, enough. Judgment's over. And from the other side of the stage, you can imagine Jesus walking out onto that stage and standing right behind that child, right with you, and saying, that's absolutely right. It's over. No more judgment. And he looks down to the table of judges and he says, you all may be excused. Your services will no longer be required here. And you can imagine the table of judges slowly getting up, You can hear the crowd leaving. And then Jesus says to the crowd, and you can go too, because I want this 8-year-old kid to play for an audience of one, just for me. And I'm telling you right now that the judgment is over for this kid, for this little boy, for this little girl. It's a good kid. Growing up in some tough situations, a lot of stress. It's doing the best it can. And I'm not going to leave it. I'm not going to forsake it. This little boy or little girl is mine. And you can imagine, Jesus, you as your older self, the courage that you feel, and this little 8-year-old who's off the hook from having to manage life anymore, walking off the stage and the feeling of freedom, feeling of safety, the feeling of assurance. You're a good kid. Open up your eyes. This was an exercise that my dad gave me when I was in seminary, and I felt like I had to please everybody. And it changed my life, because it was the first time I could really get a handle on the assurance that Jesus offers every single one of you, looking at you and saying, whoever's been judging you, it's done. Trust me when I say I like you, not just love you. Trust me that I know the stress you're under, the ways you can snap, the behaviors that come out when you're not feeling the energy that you need for the situation. I know. Hear the assurance. That is forgiven. We're good. This is confession. This is assurance. It's first from God. If we're lucky enough, we get to speak it to each other. When we receive it, we have to be courageous enough to take it. And daily, it's a discipline of reclaiming it. I would love to see a group of Christian people walking around with that assurance, who aren't guarded, who don't have a marriage to being perfect anymore, so that when they cause harm, they don't have to be defensive. They don't have to put up a front. They don't have to push someone away, or they don't have to say, I'm sorry, or you're right, but, and put it back on them. I would love to see a group of Christians walking around free. And when someone says, your impatience really hurt me, which mine can, that we can say, you know what, I know that about me. I can be impatient under stress at certain times. I can be. I am sorry that I hurt your feelings. I'm going to try and walk slower so that I don't get so impatient. Will their respect for you go up or down? I'm asking. Will it go up or down? You bet. Be that kind of parent that is not married to being perfect, so that when your child says, I think you goofed, I think you were wrong, that wasn't fair, and if they're right, because sometimes they are, that you can say, you know what? You're right. I was wrong. I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? Will your respect go up or down? Yeah, up. That's legacy. That's the stuff that they will talk about when you die. Amen? God, thanks for today. Thanks for this time. Lord, I pray that you'll sift it. take it. There are people in here I know who need confession. They've been carrying stuff for so long, some of it that doesn't belong to them. I pray for a contained place for them to be able to speak. Maybe that's with a pastor, maybe that's with a counselor, maybe that's with a trusted friend. I pray for that place for them where they can confess what they've been carrying. And then I pray for assurance. Lord, let us be people that give the assurance that in Jesus Christ and His cross, we're good. And there's no need for the judgment table anymore. We walk free with a sense of lightness, knowing we don't have to be perfect, knowing we don't have to be God, because You are God. And all God's people said, Amen.